from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This week marks the two-year anniversary of the devastating North Bay wildfires, and last Wednesday, Governor Gavin Newsom signed 22 bills in an effort to curb the increasing threat of wildfire damage in the state. In this segment, we want to discuss the bills, which range from increased state authority over PG&E to financial assistance to homeowners making fire safety upgrades. And joining us here in studio is Lily Jamali, co-host and correspondent for KQED's California Report. And welcome, Lily.
It's so good to be with you. Thanks, Michael.
Good to have you here. Well, these bills are designed to certainly reduce fire damage, but also to help clean energy.
That's right. I mean, there's a lot here, as we were talking about in the break, 22 different bills in this package that was signed by the governor last week. And they really draw on the recommendations that his task force on wildfires made in June in their report. You really see echoes of the recommendations that they made there. So among the many things that this package does, we see the creation of a California Wildfire Warning Center. This is basically a network of weather stations that would help officials forecast weather that might lead to wildfire. There's another one that would require a third party to come around and double check the work that some of our state's utilities are doing on vegetation management. And therein, you see a really good example of trying to up the regulation of these utilities at a time when there's not a lot of trust that these utilities can police themselves on something as important as vegetation management.
And what's been the response of the utilities, specifically PG&E?
I actually don't know the exact response from PG&E. I mean, I think that they were very well aware that these bills were coming. And, you know, we have heard from them, not necessarily on what's been passed. I think they support the establishment, for example, of protocols on things like public safety power shutoffs. That's been a really important tool to them as they set out to try to stop wildfires being sparked from their equipment. But they've been pretty vocal also about things that are not included in this package of bills. Something that comes to mind there would be AB 235, which was brought forth by Republican Assemblyman Chad Mays. That's a bill that PG&E's CEO personally went to Sacramento to lobby for, and he personally talked to lawmakers in an attempt to broker a deal such that the state would have been able to issue tax-free bonds on PG&E's behalf. That one didn't make it here. And I think that for people in the ratepayer advocacy community, that's a positive sign for them. But just because the battle is over for now, it doesn't mean that, you know, that one's not going to come back in January. It's very likely that we will be hearing from PG&E once again in January when lawmakers return to Sacramento.
Well, there are a number of bills that really didn't make it through. We'll talk with KQED's Lauren Sommer about that. But let's first bring in Senator Bill Dodd, who's California State Senator District 3, which includes Napa County and parts of Sonoma County. He's also co-chair of the Legislative Conference Committee on Wildfire Preparedness and Response. And welcome, Senator Dodd. Good to have you aboard.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm interested in what you feel got through of importance here, particularly since you sponsored a number of bills, and particularly in light of what just occurred in American Canyon. There was fire that broke out there that actually covered about 500 acres up in your territory.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, when I woke up on October 8, 2017, I never thought in my wildest imagination that wildfire, you know, insurance, preparedness, utility stuff, all this stuff would be such a major part of my legislative package. And, you know, last night is a clear reminder and continuing reminder for people throughout California that climate change is here. These fires are different than they've ever been. And we've got to be aware and ready to go.
Well, the real question here is when we think about what happened 2 years ago, there were 40 North Bay residents killed. There was about 6,200 homes that were destroyed, over 150 in your own backyard. And are we safer now with this legislation? Do you feel maybe even more confident to a degree? And what degree?
Well, you know, I think from the standpoint of because of all these regulations over time, and also because I think we'd be safer even without some of these regulations, just because people are more aware. We did not do a good job at any level of government. This is not a criticism, because I just don't really feel like the magnitude of these fires could have been foreseen. But now that they have been seen, and 2 years later, actually 1 year later with the campfires and, you know, and the tragedies in Butte County that you know, that happened as well up there. And then no matter if you were a part of the fire, a victim or not, you were really in your communities because the air quality, schools were closed. So I think people are much more aware. I think all the fire departments at the state level, local, county, and even special districts are communicating more strategically on what to do in these particular areas. We're monitoring better. So then, yes, then the legislation dovetailing and all that, we're monitoring better than we've ever monitored to really understand where the threats are. So I think we are safer, and it's not something that we can pat ourselves on the back on and say, hey, we're done here, because I don't think we're close to done. I think that we need to continue to monitor, to learn, and put forth policy that is going to make sense and keep people safe.
Can I ask you then, Senator Dodd, to talk briefly about the bills that came through with your signature on them? I know you authored about four of the 22, but also I believe there are nine that were bills that you put through that were signed into law as well.
There's been actually nine signed so far, and I've got four on the governor's desk. So,
what rises to the top there? I mean, what do you particularly want citizens to know about that you put through?
You know, I think the first one would be the, and I'm trying to get the administration changed the name of it. It's called the Wildfire Forecast and Threat Intelligence Integration Center. That's kind of a mouthful.
It is. But tell us what it does.
What it does is we know and understand throughout the state of California that our utilities have these weather stations in all these different watersheds. We also know that the University of California and other universities have these, learning centers throughout the different parts of the rural areas of the state of California. And we have cameras positioned in watersheds all throughout the state. That's all done on telemetry that comes back to the utilities, the universities, or local governments. All that information will now be going into a state center that the state will run, and that they'll be able to monitor the entire state of California to understand also the utility vegetation management plans would be able to go in. You start getting machine learning after a while, and so that now we're understanding that we have threats, of course, that are red flag warnings. Higher threats would be when those red flag warnings produce low humidities and high winds. And also on top of that, where you have areas where PG&E is not, I keep saying PG&E, it's any utility, but at any rate, where they have, fuels that are that have not been cut back, like, you know, they're only a third of the way through their plan right now. So the rest of that would be a higher threat area. And then those areas were not part of the grid. We also know that the state has responsibility in terms of, and the federal government. So we know where all those where those fuels are. So all those things added together, it really gives the state the ability to say, wow, here we are. This is the highest threat area. We can move resources. We can have people on standby. We can alert communities better and get people, on board to making sure that communities are safer.
Senator Dodd, I appreciate your outlining that for us, and thank you for all the work you've done, and thank you for joining us on Forum this morning.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
it. That's Senator Bill Dodd again, California State Senator, and he is with District 3, and that includes Napa County and parts of Sonoma County. He also co-chairs the Legislative Conference Committee on Wildfire Preparedness and Response. We're going to continue this discussion on Governor Newsom's bills that have been signed. And as I said, I want to talk about some bills that didn't get through. And you can join us at our toll-free number. Let me invite you to do that now. The number to call is 866-733-6786. We do appreciate your participation in the program, and frankly, we want you aboard. So let us know about what questions and concerns you have. And you can join us again at 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. At this point, I want to bring in Lauren Summers. She's senior science and environment reporter for KQED. Welcome, Lauren.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Let's talk about bills that didn't get through, and there was about $900 million spent, close to a billion, in fact, but a lot of bills didn't get through, and concerns that maybe people have that they didn't get through, in large part because of money?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've been tracking this really closely at KQED because, you know, the vast majority of homes that are in these risky fire zones were built a long time ago, before there were these modern codes to make buildings safer for wildfires. And so at the beginning of the legislative session, there was a real push to put some money behind making existing homes safer. There's a couple ways to do that. You know, one is retrofitting them. There's a bill, AB 38, that would have created a $1 billion fund to create loans for homeowners to retrofit their houses, which means maybe putting in replacing a wood roof or replacing your attic vents because embers can actually fly through your attic vent into your attic to start a fire. But there wasn't the money. The bill is actually passed. It was signed by Governor Newsom. It does create a fund for home loans, but there's no money behind it. And so lawmakers are going to have to find funding for it next year, possibly.
There was also a bill, as I understand it, that would have at least shown some concern about building in wildfire areas or wildfire vulnerable areas. But again, the problem became one related not so much to money, but to the housing stock.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of California's toughest problems, right? There's a huge housing shortage, and yet we don't want to be putting homes in these very risky areas. So SB 182 is a bill that was designed to discourage local areas from putting the homes in these very, very high-risk areas. And if they were going to approve homes there, they would have to ensure that there were things like defensible space enforcement, there was good evacuation plans, good firefighting capacity, things like that. It got hung up in the Housing Committee because there were concerns that it would allow local areas to kind of pass on their requirements to build more housing. Local areas have these numbers they have to hit for new housing. And so there was a concern that some areas might be able to wiggle their way out of these requirements. Now, I've been assured by multiple lawmakers that in the new year they're going to take this bill up and find a way to pass it. But, you know, you just kind of see how sticky these problems are with, you know, the housing need and yet the wildfire risk. And the state really needs to figure out how to balance these things.
And what about the bill for Cal Fire to reach its inspection goals? I mean, there was real concern about that because it had only reached, what, about 33% in 2019?
Yeah, so we did a whole investigation on KQED about this year because, you know, this is where Cal Fire can go around. They check people's homes to make sure that they're clearing dangerous brush and trees from around their houses. I mean, the science shows that this can actually make a real difference, you know, at least for some fires, in preventing homes from catching. And so Cal Fire has a goal to inspect 33% of the homes in its jurisdiction, but we did an investigation that showed they were only hitting half of that in 2018. And some places in the state, it's only 6% of homes that are getting inspected every year. And so there was a bill at AB 1516 that would have required Cal Fire to hit this 33% goal. That would have meant hiring new inspectors. It would have cost millions of dollars. There wasn't money in Governor Newsom's budget to do this, so the bill was kind of watered down a bit, and it passed the legislature. It says that the local community groups, these could be fire safe councils, these could be other groups, could help Cal Fire with defensible space inspections. Essentially, these community groups will go around, look at people's homes. They won't be able to tell homeowners that they have to fix their defensible space, but they would just write it up and then hand that information to Cal Fire so that they could do it. So, you know, I think there was a lot of frustration that, you know, while, you know, literally you were saying almost $1 billion is being spent on fire safety this year, this question of making existing homes safer has received almost no money.
Is there an attempt, at least I'm reading about an attempt, for some kind of compromise on building in high wildfire vulnerable areas in terms of being vulnerable to serious wildfires? I mean, Scott Wiener has said this delay won't be long, but are they airing it out in your judgment?
Yeah, I think we'll have to see in January when they pick the bill back up. I mean, State Senator Scott Wiener, you know, he assured me that he was very much behind this bill. And, you know, the real sticking point was, you know, say you have a town where the only place they can build is in these very high-risk areas for fires. You know, he said he's supportive of having those areas be able to reduce their housing allocation. So he wasn't saying that, you know, we have to build no matter what. But I think the real devil's in the details. He really wants to make sure that the language is very specific so that cities wouldn't be able to reduce their housing allotment when they really shouldn't be, because he's saying he's supportive of infill development, right? Building their downtowns, building in existing areas. So we'll see in January.
Lauren Sommer with us, science and environment reporter for KQED, and thank you for joining us, Lauren.
Thanks so much.
I'm going to invite you, our listeners, to join us now. We're going to continue with Lily Jamali, co-host and correspondent for KQED's A California Report, and we do want to hear your questions and concerns, not only about wildfires, but really about energy, because they're both tied together here, and how to prevent and fight wildfires. There has certainly been a lot of action on the part of the state legislature, but just how much that will bring, well, more safety, I think, is the central question here, but also fighting and the necessity to have the tools to fight these wildfires. You can give us a call right now if you have a comment. The number to call is 866-733-6786. We welcome your involvement in the program. And again, you can join us toll-free, 866-733-6786. Or get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have to forum@kqed.org. And let me go back to you, Lily, just for a moment, because there was, $21 billion that was signed off by Governor Newsom in terms of liability where the utilities and PG&E are concerned. How does that figure into this whole picture vis-a-vis the legislation that has gone through?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question. And I've been looking at this package of bills through the lens of, you know, what kind of cleanup is happening to fix dangling or outstanding issues from previous legislation. And I think you're referring to AB 1054, which was the landmark law that passed in July very quickly, for some critics' tastes. But what it did was it set up that $21 billion wildfire fund so that future victims can tap into it and get money more quickly than they otherwise would. But it also protected the investor-owned utilities from these growing liabilities that we're seeing them face increasingly. And one of the concerns about the timeline, you know, you saw some really big changes made to that bill on the Friday of the July 4th holiday weekend. And a week later, that was the law. And what happened during that Friday was we saw the addition of a couple of really important amendments. One of them erected additional hurdles to a place like San Francisco, which wants to municipalize. They want to take their utility off of PG&E's hands and run the grid themselves. And so that kind of slid in there at the last minute to the dismay of many of the utilities critics. And so within this array of 22 bills that we're talking about this morning, you have SB 550, which was sponsored by State Senator Jerry Hill, which does try to clean that up a little bit. It makes a potential takeover a la what San Francisco is trying to do less complicated, tries to remove some of those hurdles.
Senator Dodd mentioned insurance. Do we have anything in these bills that really addresses concerns over insurance, and what do we have?
On insurance, I'm not actually probably the best person to ask about that. I didn't see anything,
which is why.
I think that's really important. I'm actually in touch with Commissioner Lara's office this morning, Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara.
Who is under fire, we should add.
Who is under fire for a scandal not related to the topic we're talking about this morning. But what's important there is, as we approach the second anniversary of the Tubbs fire tomorrow, there is a call for insurance, which generally will cover the standard, I believe, is 2 years, to have that standard extended to 3 years. And Commissioner Lara tells us that he has been working with the insurance companies to try to make such an extension happen. I checked in with him late last week and again this morning, and it looks like those talks are happening, but the actual, you know, action has not been taken yet. So I know that that's something that's top of mind for people whose insurance is running out as we approach the second anniversary of that fire in Santa Rosa area.
Lily Jamali with us, co-host and correspondent for the California Report, KQED's California Report. And Bart is our first caller. Bart, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for having this discussion. I am a fire survivor from 2015 in Lake County. I lost my home and pets in the Valley Fire. And so all of this directly affects me. And I'm very sorry to hear that Governor Newsom is not putting more direct funds behind some of these legislations that are needed, especially the one that was just being talked about. We all know that it takes 3 and 4 years following a disaster for people to be able to rebuild. That was legislated by Bill Dodd. Sorry, I'm having a migraine this morning.
I'm sorry.
It's a little hard to speak, but it's so important. And this was not backed up by Governor Newsom and was argued down by the insurance companies. And the thing that's crucial to know is that as we have more and more wildfires in California, there are disaster statistics that following wildfire, 50% of the affected population leave the area.
That is an important statistic indeed. And I hope your migraine gets better. And I'm sorry about what you went through with Lake County. But let me go to Lily Jamali on this. And thank you, Bart, for that call. I mean, the governor has been getting, I suppose, more praise and criticism for these legislative bills. But at the same time, there are people who feel like the caller didn't push hard enough.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to some extent, there is a sense that you can do something with legislation, but you can't fully legislate your way out of this problem. These fires are on a scale that we have never seen. And, you know, to the caller's point, when people leave, that does lasting damage to a community. I mean, think of how closely knit the people of Paradise were. You have entire families who own, you know, a couple of houses on the same block and were in constant communication, constantly taking care of each other, neighbors whose, you know, parents watching the kids from 20 years ago. And those relationships are really important in a moment where, you know, a wildfire may be coming. And what I'm seeing in this array of bills is, you know, attempts to try to help facilitate communication. And that's really important. As we speak right now, there are power shutoffs that are happening in Butte County, in Paradise, of all places, among others. And when you have those shutoffs, you have to think about how are we letting the most vulnerable parts of our population know? How do we let people, for example, with disabilities that might rely on, you know, on life support equipment that depends on having power in their home? And those communities being so tight knit for as long as they were, what we're seeing is people not coming back, those relationships being dissolved to some extent. And so an even further breakdown of communication that's trying to be resolved in this legislation to some extent. I mean, some of the bills that we've seen here try to cushion the impact on medically vulnerable people, try to warn first responders and telecommunication companies, for example, as far ahead in advance as possible when those shutoffs happen. But when you fundamentally see the disintegration of a community, that communication, that patchwork becomes that much more dicey.
And here's a tweet that sort of dovetails with what we're talking about, what we've been talking about in terms of housing needs and all of this. Monica says, the conflict between housing need and wildfire risk is very real. In Orinda, with a BART station, it might seem sensible to build more housing, but with our narrow roads, with few outlets and many bottlenecks, forcing more housing here could create a massive death trap back to Paradise, huh?
Yeah.
A listener also writes, the Department of Energy's Home Energy Score pays inspectors to assess home energy use. The inspector could easily assess the home for fire safety. And that's, I think, also a worthy point. Let me get to some more of our calls and find out what our listeners have to add to this. Lisa joins us from San Rafael. I think power's out there now, isn't it, Lisa? Lisa, are you there? I'm sorry, I thought the power was out in Marin. Maybe the power's out and Lisa can't get through to us. I believe it did go off today in Marin. Let me get another caller on here. That's you, Ann from Mountain View. Good morning.
Hi, yeah, we're Oakland firestorm survivors. I've actually been on forum after that situation long-term, and I wanted to say that it's very discouraging to hear people going through the same things, you know, again and again. And I wanted to publicly ask the governor to make it so that insurance companies can't insert gag clauses automatically in settlements. We didn't actually sign ours. We actually let them negotiate it down to, you know, they wore us down. They negotiated the last personal property settlement down to a fraction, and we agreed to it. And then at the last minute, they inserted a gag clause. You know, they shouldn't be able to do that. That should just be illegal. It should be okay for policyholders to want there to be a gag clause if there's an interest there, but it shouldn't be possible for insurance companies who are obligated to pay those claims to make people not be able to talk about it. It's traumatic. People should be able to talk about what they went through, and it's in the public interest for people to be able to help other disaster survivors.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that to our attention, and thank you for having been a guest here on the forum program. Appreciate hearing from you. I'm going to read now a comment from a listener named Maddie who writes, "This past weekend, I took a walk around Santa Rosa's Coffee Park with my friend who lost his house there in 2017 fire. I was shocked to see all the new construction being done with old-fashioned eave and foundation vents, not modern vents designed to resist fire. It seems like the guiding principle here is build it cheap and build it safe, and it's a gross failure on the part of local authorities." Lily Jamali.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that narrative of rebuild is so powerful after a disaster like this. And, you know, on one hand, I think it's in some senses productive for people. It helps people move on and give something for them to look forward to. They obviously want to move on with their lives and rebuild. But on the other hand, it can be a destructive force. And if you ask people in Paradise, a lot of them are really struggling with the question of whether to rebuild or not. And, you know, the toxicity of that environment now is something that I think is very much top of mind for a lot of residents of Paradise as they make that decision.
But forgive me, Lily, the real essence of that call is you got to build, you're going to build, you've got to build safe, and you really need to build safe.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. We need to think through what we are doing before we put pen to paper here. And as you say, you know, lessons learned. We had an Oakland firestorm survivor who is saying, "This happened to me years and years ago. I can't believe people are still dealing with this." Well, I think people who survived the Tubbs fire are looking at survivors of the campfire and watching, you know, a fast forward of exactly what they went through a year prior. And it's very frustrating for them to see that we're not seeing necessarily sustainable solutions, or we're seeing ideas but not the money to back those ideas up, as evidenced by what Lauren was saying earlier.
Talk about the money. There's still the ongoing problem in rebuilding of finding the construction workers and the materials. Shortages in both areas.
Yeah, shortages of workers. I was talking with the district attorney of Butte County, Mike Ramsey, a couple of weeks ago, and he brought that to my attention. There's a real concern about contractor fraud. People so desperate to build and to build quickly that they kind of leave themselves vulnerable to being taken advantage of by unscrupulous actors.
Now, there's a topic for another day for us. Lily, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Lily Jamali is co-host and correspondent with KQED's California Report. We also spoke with science and environment reporter Lauren Sommer, and we spoke with Senator Bill Dodd, California State Senator of District 3. When we return, we're going to talk about climate change in a whole different area, how climate change can make us all sicker, and not only physically, but mentally. Stay tuned. That's in our hour ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.